So what we'll call the meeting to order, and if we could please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, I'd appreciate that.
And Herb, got your flag.
You ready? I pledge allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, so the minutes from the last meeting were distributed. I'll take a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting, or if there's any recommendations for changes or updates.
I'll make the motion to accept the minutes.
Accept the minutes.
I'll second
that. Yeah, two motions, 2 seconds. That's great.
Take your pick, Fawn.
And Legislator Archer just joined us.
Hi there.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great. So this month, as I've been doing throughout my tenure here, asking the different department heads to come in and kind of give an update of what their departments are up to and some of the progress they've made since the last time they've spoken with us. We get a lot of interaction with Tim based on the activity of his department, but I thought that there's a lot of things that they do that we don't hear about. Right. And I thought that there might be this give Tim an opportunity to tell us, you know, a little bit about what him and the rest of his department are doing. And I'll let you take it from there, Tim, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. I was going to share a few slides. Is that OK with you, Legislator Cahill? And then
fine with me.
Yeah. Enable the screen sharing, Fawn. That would be great.
That would be Fawn.
We'd be ready to go.
Great. Oh, it's still yelling at me.
Oh, okay, hang on. Oops, it wants me to share. Nope, not me. Sorry, I thought I had it all set here. One participant at a time.
Oh. Oh, there we go. That did it. Thank you, Fawn. So I'm going to move through these quickly because I don't want to bore you with this, but I wanted to talk about some of the things that are kind of top priorities. I can go into lots of detail if any of the committee members have questions about specific activities, but this seems like a timely opportunity to kind of recap some of the things that we've been working on over the past year. As you know, it was about a year ago that we entered into this pandemic and took a little pause on the Ulster 2040 work that we were doing. But then in June of last year, we finalized the Ulster 2040 report, which has really been the kind of guiding strategic document for our focused efforts. Obviously, there's day-to-day businesses call all the time and they have needs that we try to help to the best of our ability, but where we can pull our heads up from that day to day and kind of think longer term, it's usually by looking at the work that came out of that that economic development strategy that came from Ulster 2040. So we're executing on that plan. We really, I think it's true, and we shared with the Chamber of Commerce at a breakfast last week that this really does position us to build back better and stronger as we come out of this pandemic. I know that as we were talking about, farms are maybe always struggling, but I think there's even some programs that we're starting to see come to light with some of the federal stimulus dollars that could help with some of our local farms. And ultimately, we do see this all kind of positioning us well as there is a flood of resources that are kind of continuing to flow from the federal programs that have been enacted through CARES and then more recently through the recovery plan, that I think a lot of our work and the groundwork that we did in that Ulster 2040 process positions us well to accelerate the progress that we're seeing already. So it's been quite a year. The things that we covered in the 2040 report still remain true, maybe even are emphasized as we come through the pandemic. We talked in the 2040 report about the ALICE study that was showing that there are a surprising number of households in Ulster County that struggle to make ends meet, maybe don't fall into the poverty line, but are still struggling paycheck to paycheck. Pattern for Progress had a report about the challenges at the kind of regional level that are similar about affordability and the lack of manufacturing jobs or the transition of manufacturing to service sector jobs and the wage challenges that that presents. And then, you know, the graph here really shows it, I think, acutely since the pandemic, that high wage earners have seen relatively little hit in their incomes since the pandemic, but the folks that were lower wage earners have seen a pretty dramatic drop off in earning potential, mostly because of either going on to unemployment, which has its own separate challenges of the benefits that are provided and the impact that that has on the labor force and labor market. But ultimately, we're concerned, and I think should rightly be concerned, about making sure that as we bounce back from the pandemic, that we're paying particular attention to raising wages among those who have seen the biggest hit. This is just a kind of quick data snapshot. This actually only goes through 2018. So the trend that that last slide was showing is more acutely happening since the pandemic has really been going on for quite some time. If you were in the lowest quintile of wage earners between 2010 and 2018, you saw a 14.3% drop in your effective wages when adjusted for inflation. And so it's just really emphasizing that point that I think a lot of our efforts in economic development, you know, have created a situation where there is wage growth at the higher end of the spectrum, but ultimately, especially as prices, I was hearing Legislator Corcoran talking about housing market down south, but I think throughout the county, you know, the residential housing market has been booming, and that's great in the situation where you have a property that you can sell or can participate in that market. But for folks at the lower wage categories, the downward pressure on wages coupled with the increased cost of housing and other things is really putting some significant pressure on folks here in the county. Nothing new, I'm sure you all know this very well. This was the framing, though, that really led us to the conclusions of the Ulster 2040 report, which are that, look, things have worked pretty well overall for decades in our economic development sector in terms of trying to do things to increase the quality of life of our residents and life expectancy, growing wealth, all that stuff. But we're at this inflection point, and maybe the pandemic is really the tipping point where there's challenges, structural challenges in the economy, and we need to pay more attention to those. And so that was kind of the premise. We set that up as kind of people become the engine of our economy. We have to make sure we're bringing everybody along, and that success in economic development needs to evolve from just talking about jobs to talking about the quality of those jobs, the wages that they pay, the ability to connect both our current residents and our next generation of residents to employment opportunities here so that they stay in our community rather than leaving for opportunity, all that kind of stuff. And so all of that leads to a commitment to engage in new ways to try to achieve that success. I'm gonna highlight some really high level, big picture things that we're working on that are in alignment with those goals that are spelled out in the Ulster 2040 report. The link there takes you to the full report, which is about 43 pages, and it has a little bit more detail. So the report set up five clusters that we're focusing most of our attention on. Again, we have day-to-day, and if somebody calls us, we do our best to connect them with the resources and support that they need in order for their business to thrive. But when it comes to the free time, the little free time that we have, we're focusing our attention on these clusters. There's four of them that are industry-related: ag, food and beverage, health, wellness and care, clean energy and the environment, artists, makers and creators. And then there's this fifth cluster, which is really recognizing that just like water, sewer, power, natural gas are infrastructure that's important to economic development, so is housing, so is transportation, so is childcare. All of these things that maybe at one point we could take for granted in a more competitive climate, we have to make sure that we have those things so that we continue to be able to have a viable economy and a workforce that can participate in that economy. So first thing on the artists, makers and creators, I'll just quickly make the point, which hopefully is kind of clear even from the term, but manufacturing is a big part of this cluster. We've chosen to call it makers and creators just to emphasize a thing that I think is true of manufacturers generally in Ulster County and throughout the region, that it's not an easy place. New York State is not a cheap place. There's a lot of regulation. It's a difficult place to be in the manufacturing industry. And so what I think is uniquely special about the employers that succeed here is that they have a passion for making things, whether those are digital things or physical things, there's really a commitment to the craft that they're in. And I think that that's why we chose this term makers and creators, even though we really mean manufacturers and digital creators are included in that. One of the things we've been hearing nonstop since the pandemic and kind of with a growing chorus of consensus is that these manufacturers are having a really hard time filling, especially entry-level positions. We can point to the challenges, as I mentioned before, unemployment insurance and the boosted benefit is making disincentives really for some people to re-enter the workplace. That'll phase out in the fall. And so we may see folks continuing to kind of be in a position where they don't necessarily have to work full-time for a little bit, but it will end. And as it starts to end, we're preparing to work with our manufacturing employers to capture the employees that they need, make sure that they have the workforce that they need, and ultimately to think about manufacturing again as the occupations that can provide the wages that support people living here in our community. And so we really want to try to find ways for people to have pathways into those occupations. We've been partnering a lot with SBDC and SUNY Ulster on a program that we're just tentatively calling a fast track program. We're designing this right now. So it would be for youth and adults who are job seekers, as well as for business owners to kind of enter into a portal together where the job seekers can have access to training opportunities, the employers can have access to a pool of qualified candidates and post their positions. On Thursday, we're having a roundtable with about 30 Ulster County manufacturers that have been convened by the Council of Industry to roll this out and to start talking in particular about the job dashboard. We have an opportunity to partner with Council of Industries to provide a free service to our manufacturers to get their jobs posted and to work with them ultimately to help them figure out the right ways to recruit entry-level positions, candidates into positions that they have open. So I think this is one that's driven by those employers in this makers and creators cluster. We're also, you know, I think there's a lot of signs that even during the pandemic, there's a lot of physical building that's going on related to some of our manufacturing and digital creative businesses. Some of the recent examples, things that are underway or have been completed are up here. The Fuller Building, a really great example in Midtown Kingston, of kind of build it and they will come. A lot of either existing firms here in the region that have expanded like Exago, or a lot of firms coming out of New York City that found that as a landing pad for their business during the pandemic. The Metro is an ongoing project that's kind of evolved, but Nova Foundation has taken a really active role, and some of the drawings there you see are the conceptual plans that they're thinking of a fab lab in that Metro building as a way to encourage small-scale manufacturing, partnering with the Hudson Valley Additive Manufacturing Center at SUNY New Paltz that does 3D printing, so there can be rapid prototyping, kind of, if you need it, you can build it there. So that's the model. And then even in Ellenville, Arc of Ulster Green has been doing some projects like in Midtown Kingston. They've created kind of an incubator for food businesses. They're talking about and moved significantly along doing something in Ellenville to the same effect, really looking at digital printing businesses that have chosen to locate there. So some physical activity going on, as well as the obvious project that we've spent some time and energy on all collectively. This is Enterprise West, and that fits into this kind of overall picture of building the makers and creators cluster. We saw some really interesting proposals from a number of businesses that we would consider makers and creators and artists, and see this as emerging as kind of a physical hub for some of those makers and creators. Obviously, a lot more conversation on Enterprise West. I won't get us bogged down in that right here and now, but that's one way in which that kind of fits into our overall economic development effort. On the next cluster, agriculture, food, and beverage, the strategy here is really about building the local food value chain. And so on the farming side, this is the producers, whether it's livestock, dairy, vegetables, and then, you know, working with them to make sure that they have access to both packers to package that food or processors to value add on that food product. And then kind of working its way through the whole value chain from distributors. Ultimately, this picture kind of shows the goal of trying to reach institutional buyers. So we really want to open up this market to our agriculture producers and our value-added processors to be able to get products that are locally sourced, locally processed into our local institutions like childcare centers, schools, colleges, and universities. And so we're working on that really, again, as a component of some of our Enterprise West work, ultimately just supporting this food manufacturing kind of ecosystem that it lays at the nexus of all of that value chain, helping to make sure that there's cold storage, there's distribution, there's value-added production as a way to enhance the agricultural products that are produced here and provide more benefit to our local farmers, as well as healthy benefits to people consuming local food. In the health, wellness, and care, back to the idea of workforce as one of the main challenges. We've been in a long conversation with a number of our healthcare providers about the challenges that they're having, exacerbated by the pandemic, of course, of filling open positions. We've recently, in partnership with OET, the Office of Employment and Training, we've issued a survey to these healthcare providers, also to wellness practitioners, so kind of expanding the circle a little bit, to ask what are the occupations that they're trying to fill, what are the training requirements for those, so that we can better align the training programs to make sure that we're feeding candidates that really are the right candidates for the positions that these employers need. Ellenville Regional Hospital has been such a huge proponent of this. They're super invested in their people and see this as a really important opportunity to continue to have the talent pipeline that they need. And then there's also physical building going on here. These are obvious projects that, you know, I think there's a limited way in which our office is involved in these, but they're examples of kind of the activity that's going on in this cluster, both Landmark Place, their supportive housing, and then obviously the enhancements and improvements going on at the Health Alliance campus. On the clean energy and the environment, I could barely even scratch the surface of this in a couple of minutes, so I'll just leave this kind of up here for a second. This is the kind of complete component of the Green New Deal. So the Green New Deal, as Pat announced at his briefing about 2 weeks ago now, includes these three categories of actions: transitioning to clean energy, equitable growth, and improving resilience in our communities. The equitable growth part falls directly within kind of and aligned with our economic development department. And so these are activities that we're involved in partnership with the office, the Department of the Environment, and with other partners to try to implement the aspects of the Green New Deal. Things like the Green Careers Coalition, working with OET on summer youth internships and promoting those. Working in particular, we've just submitted a grant application in partnership with a local accelerator program to the U.S. Economic Development Administration to start up a water solutions accelerator, looking to grow a green growth fund that could help to support green infrastructure projects in the community. And then we're going to be starting up a green economy network to try to just build this network, get folks to the table, talk about what are the opportunities for further growth in the kind of green economy sector. And then finally, the last one is not an industry cluster, but is these items related to social and economic infrastructure, housing, childcare, transportation, really trying to support more local ownership through things like worker co-ops, trying to improve the availability of quality jobs, focusing on the quality component, making sure that they're paying a wage that can support folks living here. Partnerships is the name of the game. We are regularly working with everything from other departments in the county, the IDA, SBDC, the college, you know, BOCES, a bunch of partners involved in all this work. And then trying really concerted efforts to engage underrepresented communities in our work to make sure that they're not left behind, particularly as we recover from the pandemic. And so in that area of building the social and economic infrastructure, a couple of key things just to kind of tie the dots together here. Housing is the number one issue of the moment, so to speak. And so the work that we're doing on the Golden Hill housing development is tied into this strategy, as well as the housing action plan that was recently released and that kind of spells out some specific initiatives that we'll be undertaking to try to support and strengthen the availability of housing in the county. You know, not trying to claim complete credit on those, but just saying that these tie into our economic development strategy, so we're tracking on them and supporting them. A quick summary of some next steps, just to kind of show you what's on our horizon. We just had our USITA board meeting for the month, and in that meeting talked about surfacing again for conversation with the legislature, a contract for services. This is something that was in place for several years and then faded away in the last couple of years, recognizing that there were some challenges with the way that it was handled in the past. I think it's time to revisit that discussion, talk about the unique powers and abilities that this special purpose LDC, which is a kind of extension of the county, can affect, and then purposefully designing a contract to have that organization pursuing those things that it's best positioned to pursue, and ultimately see those as some key components of the Ulster 2040 strategy. You know, I think it's a worthwhile topic to at least discuss. I would propose it, and I've had a little bit of conversation with Legislator Cahill on this, but you know, we have this Ulster 2040 plan. We've been using it to guide our work. It would seem like a reasonable request and one that I'd be happy to entertain in future conversations to work with this committee on what it would take to adopt that formally as the county's economic development strategy. I think that would be helpful in terms of the feedback and guidance that it would provide in conversation with you all, and would again position us well for future funding requests, grant applications, all that kind of thing. We're going to keep executing on that plan. So if you want a deeper preview of the things that we're likely to take on, take a look at the detailed plan. There's a bunch of recommended actions and initiatives in there. And ultimately, our goal right now, our kind of primary focus, is helping our businesses to bounce back stronger as they start to recover from the pandemic. That's the high level, Legislator Cahill. I'm happy to, if somebody wanted something more tactical or specific, I'm happy to do it, but that's the high level.
Well, I think that that was very good, Tim. I don't know if anyone on the committee, because you're sharing your screen. So if you would unshare, I'll be able to see everyone. There you go. Thank you. Anyone have any questions for Tim or any comments that you'd like to make? No? Okay, I will make a couple of comments. So, you know, going back to, you know, the Ulster 2040 and how that folds into, you know, our overall plans going forward as a county, right? I think it would really be a good idea that we do, in fact, endorse that in some way, right? As a legislature, to say that, yeah, we agree that this is a plan and a goal that we should be achieving together with the executive's office. We'll bring that up for further discussion, but I wanted to, like Tim just did, throw that out there, because I do believe that if we send a unified message out, it will be beneficial to people who are looking at the county, rather than to say, if we're going to come here, but yeah, we want to do this green job thing, but you know, we're not sure how the legislature is going to look on it. If we can, you know, do it in conjunction, say, look, we have the full breadth and width of the county government behind you, you know, that might be a little bit more attractive. Something we'll talk about. And Tim, thank you for that presentation. It was very good. I think we've all seen at some point some of that before, but some of it is new. The Green New Deal stuff, obviously, is relatively new. And I do appreciate you taking your time. I see Legislator Archer had her hand up.
Yeah, thank you. It's in relationship to the LMI piece that was just sent the other day, because I think it ties into some of the stuff you're talking about, particularly how you're going to how you're proposing to help businesses bounce back given the pandemic. And it looks at, from what I could see here, it's looking at the struggling kind of low, moderate income businesses that are struggling and that may have had a bigger impact as a result of the pandemic. And one of the things I noticed in here was that mentorship. And I think USITA was going to do that, and then the pandemic hit. I don't know if it ever got kicked off, but I thought if any group it could help, it would be this group. And I don't think that was the initial intent of that, was it?
Yeah, no, a bunch of really good points in there, Legislator Archer. First thing, I think you're referring to a public hearing that we're scheduling to coincide with the next legislative session, which is a required public hearing as we prepare to submit an application to the state's Community Development Block Program, Block mm-hmm. Grant Program, which has funding from the CARES Act, the kind of second wave of federal stimulus that they are offering to communities that apply for it, to support low to moderate income businesses to help them cope from the impacts of the pandemic. And so we're preparing an application along those lines that's consistent with, you saw in the slide, one thing in particular, which was engaging underrepresented communities. Some of these low to moderate income businesses are just not the businesses that typically come to us asking for support. And so this is, I think, a population of businesses that really, maybe you all know this already, but 90% of the businesses in Ulster County have less than 20 employees. So there are a lot of these small, low to moderate income businesses that don't often get our assistance. So this program is designed to try to reach them.
So how are you going to market? Because to me, that's the biggest hit. It's those in the know that usually take advantage of this. You're only targeting 23 or so potential small businesses, but it could expand based on what people are looking for in the grants. But and this is all forgivable as well, correct?
Yeah. So the way we're proposing it is that they would be structured as loans, but after 5 years, the loans could be forgiven. That ensures that that we're not given to businesses that then the next week close, and that would be unfortunate. So that's the proposed structure. The marketing is a component of the budget of the grant request so that we can have some funding to get the word out about this. So that's a program cost that's wrapped into the grant application. And we would use kind of all the traditional channels as well as engaging with some of the newer partners that we've established in the last few months. We had a group called Excel 7 that is an accelerator program that worked with us through UCEDA for a little bit during the pandemic doing some mentoring. I think they learned a lot of really valuable lessons through that. They had a pretty amazing hands-on approach to mentoring, but they didn't have a good sense of how to market it and get the right businesses involved. And so I think, you know, we've got all the pieces now to put them together to do something really impactful with these low to moderate income businesses. This application would give us the resources to really do that. So that's what we're pursuing.
And you're looking at it across Ulster County. Are you thinking of doing any kind of engagement at the town level?
Yep.
To help folks understand, or a small business. And, you know, we've got, you know, there's chambers across the county, the Roundout Valley Business Association, you know, obviously the Ulster County Chamber, but there are smaller groups that can be beneficial in helping to bring those together. So I hope we would be utilizing.
Totally. Yeah, I've been kind of perfecting a roadshow, so to speak, that we are kind of testing out. I have a meeting next week with the Roundout Valley Business Association where I'll be presenting that. We've met with the chamber. We've talked with the Board of Realtors and the Commercial Realtors Association. So we're getting out there, always eager. If you guys know of a kind of specialized group that's either limited in geographic focus or targeted on a certain kind of business, always eager to make connections with those groups. We've had a number of them that we've started to make new connections with, and those will become really useful vehicles to get the word out about this, as well as, you know, there's not enough time to go into every dimension of all this, but one of the things that's been a priority for me and that I think the county executive has made a priority as well is engaging at that local level in what we call community economic development, understanding at the local town level, what are the priorities, what's the landscape, what are the businesses that are there. You know, I think there in some of our towns, I think of Town of Esopus, for example, has an economic development committee. And so we've engaged with that committee. Other towns haven't organized to that level. And so we're engaging with the town leadership. But we'll continue to do that as another way to get at the businesses that really need this help the most.
And we've applied for this grant already. Is that the case or no?
Nope. It's a draft application. Before we can officially apply, we need to hold a public hearing. And so that's the next step is the public hearing. And then following the public hearing, any input or feedback received during the public hearing will be incorporated into the application, which will then be submitted.
Because I saw somewhere 800 and then I saw a million. So I wasn't quite sure what you were applying for.
Yeah, so the total request for funding is $1 million. You back out of that the program administration fees, and it's $820,000 of direct assistance to businesses.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for Tim before we let him go on his way, or he can hang around, I don't care. All right, well, thanks again, Tim. I appreciate it, and you're always welcome, and seems like you're always here anyway, but you're always welcome to come to our meetings and chime in and let us know what's going. You're a busy guy. Your department is one of the most active departments in the county government, and we do appreciate you taking the time to come in here and fill us in and let us know what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate this committee's support and engagement. It's good to talk with you all. Thanks.
Awesome. So with that, we're going to move on with our agenda, and we'll move on to our resolutions, and we're going to start with Resolution 220. Which is scheduling a public hearing as required under Article 25AA of the Ag and Market Law on the addition of lands to agricultural districts to be held June 15, 2021, or soon thereafter as the public can be heard, and providing direct notice to affected municipalities for the Department of Planning.
So moved.
Second by DeLong. Any conversation? Go ahead, Lynn.
Just a question. I thought there was some minimum acreage required to include some of these properties in the ag district. Am I mistaken on that, or can we get some clarification? Because I saw some of them are only an acre here or 10 acres. I thought there were minimum requirements.
If I may, Mr.
Sure, go right ahead. Sure. Thank you.
If I may, Legislator Archer, the minimum requirements are generally for the establishment of a district, not for additions to the district.
So 1 acre would give that they're entitled to, as long as it's being used for farming, correct?
That's correct. To meet, in order to receive exemptions, they have to meet a minimum amount of money raised for agriculture. That's $10,000. And I will tell you that the small plot acreage farmers that do intensive agriculture, they will argue that they can produce a whole lot of agriculture on a couple of acres.
And so they meet that requirement.
That's correct. Well, they don't have to get in. They have to show an intent to get in. And this will be reviewed by the Farmland Protection Board for those additions. And that report will come back to the legislature, similar to the Ag District 1 review that the county just received to certify a new district. Mm.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? No? Okay, I'll accept a motion to approve it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, great, thank you. Resolution 221, which is rescinding resolution number 175 of 2021 and approving the execution of a contract amendment for $75,000 entered into by the county, the United Way of Ulster County Incorporated, Office of Employment and Training. So I think we've gone over this one other time, right? Right? Anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I do. Please refresh my memory. I'll make the motion for discussion.
Okay, in a second. Okay, John, I think this is you, right?
Yeah, just quickly. Well, frankly, it's under Evelyn's portfolio, but—
Evelyn's not here
quickly
tonight.
Before she went on vacation. This is a technical amendment to a resolution that was passed by the legislature, I believe, last month. The numbers and bottom line, this is all federal funding. The numbers that were submitted as part of the resolution were incorrect by OET. They had to revise them to match the grant request. That's why they had to rescind what was passed last month, redo it, resubmit with the corrected numbers to obtain the full grant funding for this program. It's the same for both of the resolutions here in a row.
Right. So go ahead, Herb.
So if we're voting to rescind these from last month, I do not see on our agenda new resolutions to replace them.
Rescinding and approving the new contract.
It's all one.
It's all one resolution for each contract.
Oh, okay.
We're just adding 5,000, Herb.
I think you're adding considerably more than that, but.
Yeah.
I thought we were sending 70 and giving 75, wasn't it?
On this one, yes.
Yeah.
The next one is
significant. A little bit more.
Yeah, this one's 5,000.
Right. So any further discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And I think we have an abstention on this one. Is that correct?
Yes, it's 5-0 with one abstention. Legislator, you should tell.
Thank you very much. Okay, resolution number 222 is rescinding resolution number 176 of 2021 and approving the execution of a contract amendment for $288,210 entered into by the county, United Way of Ulster County Incorporated, Office of Employment and Training.
I'll move it.
Second. Okay. So any discussion on this one? Okay. All those in favor? Unless Legislator Corcoran. Okay. Aye. Opposed? And we have an abstention on this one as well?
Yes, sir. This passes 5-0 with one abstention. Legislator Uchitel.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on to 223, which is establishing a capital project number 587. For technology upgrade infrastructure, Department of Information Services. And I want to just check my notes. I believe this is the one for the Sheriff's Department. Is that correct?
This one is, you said 223, right?
Yes, you're right. It's not this
one. These are the switches. So this will be the one of the first times. A lot of times these are done through operational funds. It made sense to bond these since it's a large amount. We have a lot of our switches who have that have come to end of life, and so these are just upgrades at various buildings.
Okay. I'll move it.
Your second? Second, Legislator Archer. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution number 225 is establishing capital project number 588 for personal computer replacement, Department of Information Services. I believe this is the one, right? Yeah. So a question
I'll move it.
Oh, sorry about that. Second by Legislator Archer. Question came up in another meeting about whether these are the same computers that we talked about at the end of last year that are just now being replaced at this time, or are these additional computers to what we replaced at the end of last year in the budget? I think they came up in the budget cycle, I think is when we had the first discussion.
Yeah, so this was discussed, I think, quite a bit in the Ways and Means joint meeting with Capital Public Works Committee. This is a considerable amount that is being purchased for the sheriff, but these are all just one purchase. It wasn't two separate purchases. I think on the chair's committee meeting, people just thought that because we had that discussion that there was a double purchase.
Right. Okay, any further discussion on this one then? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, and then we're on to our last resolution already, which is Resolution 227, amending Capital Project 568 for electric bus charging infrastructure project, authorizing chair to legislature to execute an amended customer project commitment with New York Power Authority, and amending Capital Project 568 for the Department of Public Transportation, UCAT.
I'll move it for discussion.
A second?
A second.
Okay. Is there any questions? Okay, so a couple of questions came up in the chair's meeting about this particular one. And one is, what is the capacity of this upgrade? We know that the original plan, I think as you let us know before, was that it wasn't sufficient for the buses that we were getting, right? There wasn't enough power there. And so the question became, how many buses will this support, and is it sufficient for what we're going to be getting, you know, currently in our plans and some expansion in the future?
I'll take this one. I know Amanda Lavelle from the Department of Environment is here as well, but basically that's exactly what this resolution and what this scaling up of this project will serve to do. I asked Nick Vosda what's a good analogy, and he said, you know, it's the capability of charging up to 12 buses. Right now, our current RFP we awarded in the beginning of last year allows us to purchase up to 10 electric buses from New Flyer of America. We have three that the purchase order was executed in March. And the charging infrastructure that was originally envisioned was just for those three electric vehicles or buses rather. So what this scaling up will do is allow us to continue to order off the open RFP and scale up to the 10, where we just kind of simultaneously completed the transit electrification study in conjunction with the Department of Environment. So that kind of gave us a roadmap on how to electrify quickly. And obviously with the County Executive's Green New Deal and just the general landscape, federal funding is probably going to be prioritized to these type of projects. It just seemed very sensible to, you know, make these charging stations future proof. So now they'll be capable of adding extra charging ports. They'll be capable of supporting the generator. We have to upgrade our generator for the facility, and also be ready to accept this solar array, this rooftop solar array that we have secured some state funds for. And in addition to unfortunately, before this resolution went in, I couldn't figure out a state funding stream to, you know, cover the shortfall between what the county share will be. But I'm pretty confident that we will be able to get that shortfall covered. And in the grand scheme of things, this project for this initial acquisition of our three electric buses is pretty much fully state funded. But I think there are going to be additional state funds that can cover the shortfall for the next cycle. And then in addition to that, in the past week, one of our projects that we had submitted to Congressman Delgado's office that kind of works hand in hand with our initial electrification was forwarded on to be one of his member supported projects. So that's, you know, for additional electrification of the system.
Anyone have any questions? Yeah. Legislator Litz?
Will we be also adding new charging stations when we build the new facility across the street?
Yeah, so I mean, that's in a very, very early stage, obviously. That's the site selection study, and I saw Dennis here, but that's in the final draft. But the new facility is supposed to be capable of supporting a fully electrified fleet. So that was included in the scope for the site selection as well. The one kind of good thing about Golden Hill is that the transformers are right up here. So it does decrease the amount of work that Central Hudson has to do. And you know, having Nick and Amanda on the team that are working on this is extremely beneficial. Nick Voss does an engineer, so he often explains things to me. But yeah, so the new facility will support a fully electrified fleet as well.
Thank you.
So as it stands now with this resolution 227, what is the increased obligation for the county until you can round up the grants to cover the county's share?
So the shortfall is $127,924. And this is, I think, all things considered, going to be around a $2 million project. So
yeah, no, that's very reasonable. That's a good deal.
Yeah, and I do think that we will find some state funds that we can reallocate to this project as well, which I fully plan to do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone else have any other questions about this project? Good luck. Looking forward to seeing this come to fruition and get more electric buses on the road, that's for sure.
Yeah, the anticipated, right now we have weekly updates with New Flyer. Our anticipated delivery is November, so we will see.
Yeah, keep our fingers crossed. All right, any other questions? Okay, so I'll move it for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, great. So it was all in favor. So that's it for resolutions. We have nothing under old business unless anyone has something they'd like to bring up. Legislator Archer, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. It was just based on the conversation we had about the 2040 plan. And it's a pretty detailed plan, but you know, I think we had an overview presentation, but we've really never had a discussion about elements of the plan. And while I know that, you know, there was a great team of business people working on it, we've never really had a conversation about how some of the data presented had been validated. And so if we're talking about the 2040 plan as a strategic document that they're looking for endorsement for supporting, I almost feel like we need a little bit more of a detailed conversation, kind of going over the elements of it again. It was pretty comprehensive, but again, it was work of a task force, and I'm not quite sure how some of the data was validated. Was it, you know, and how we're going to use it to go forward. So I just feel like we need a little bit more before we go down a path of endorsement. I don't know. That's my opinion. No, I don't know how others are feeling about it.
I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, especially there's been members of the legislature who haven't seen it at all, right? So I think it's important that, you know, this is exposed to the whole legislative body in some way. I'm not quite sure how we could do it at that scale for a Q&A for poor Tim. He would probably be there for a couple of weeks. We'd have to do this over a couple of weeks, but I don't know how we could achieve that other than maybe, you know, invite Tim to another meeting and have us maybe even a special meeting just to go over that. I don't know.
I would be willing to come to a meeting, and maybe that would be helpful before we take it to the broader body, that we have an opportunity to flesh some things out. It's a more manageable group with questions, et cetera, that I think that, you know, then it, even if there's something done at the full body level, but I feel the need to have more conversation about it. We had one presentation, we've all looked at it. I think there should be a next step of kind of peeling it back and exploring it a little bit more deeply.
Right. So Clerk Cantillo just made a very good suggestion. Maybe we can have the chairman call an informational meeting on it. All right. Give us an opportunity to go into some more detail on it. And that would get the whole legislature involved.
It doesn't give us as a economic development a chance to really peel it back and and maybe get some of the questions answered before you go to the bigger body. I mean,
we could do however
you decide to do it. Yeah. I just think it may be easier for this group to address some of the things or at least have a conversation about it before you take it to a bigger group. I think it should go to the bigger group, but it would be great if we had a little bit of a chance to kind of tap into it a little bit more deeply.
Gotcha.
And I'd be willing to attend a special meeting. I'd be interested.
Okay. Any other comments on old business or old business? And I'll get with Tim and we'll work something out. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments or old business? Okay. So we're going to move on to new business. And as you all the legislators are aware, we got an email from the chairman requesting that we talk about some ideas for the American Rescue Plan and the funding that's presented to the county. I don't know if there's been an update yet on the actual numbers that we're going to get yet or some of the more detailed criteria around it. I know that there was some of that stuff was pending the last time I had spoken to the executive and his team about it. So I don't know. Mark or John, you guys have any more details on the rules and regs around that yet or firmer numbers? No?
Specifics from the Treasury Department have yet to be distributed and we are waiting for those. I think what we passed out previously to all the members was basic guidance that we did receive from Senator Schumer's office, Majority Leader Schumer's office. And that's essentially what we're working off of for the time being until we hear what the Treasury has to say. So that's the guidance.
Okay. I just wanted to do that before I open the floor up to any legislators who have suggestions or ideas on how they'd like to see some of these funds distributed. Legislator Litz.
Okay. The best bang for our buck is to put money into infrastructure. Infrastructure moves the economy. I know there's a lot of deficient bridges. I know there's a lot of deficient highways. I know we have issues with broadband. We have issues with a lot of other things, but the more money we put into infrastructure is the biggest bang for our buck. So that's where I'm gonna lobby for.
Okay, I know that, so our caucus held a meeting and discussed some of these things. So I don't know if our caucus wants to reintroduce them at this meeting, but I see Abe has his hand up, so.
Yeah, I was just wanted to build on Legislator Litz's point about infrastructure. And I will add to that, you know, that broadband infrastructure, you know, I believe it would fall under our committee. I'm not entirely sure, but it's certainly an economic development issue. You know, it could be considered a housing issue as well, you know, for housing options to be opened up as areas are able to receive broadband because many people, you know, need to be able to work from their home now too. That's an area of infrastructure. I know, you know, isn't such a concern perhaps for my district, but for some of the other areas in the county, you know, particularly the west and southern parts of the county, huge issue. And I think that's something that we should definitely consider as well.
I agree, 100%. Legislator DeLon?
Yeah, I'd be supportive of both. I think broadband and infrastructure is so important. And I want to take it just a little, you know, further, and that is that, you know, one of the things that we've seen during COVID is the tremendous amount of usage of our trails, both for recreation and tourism. It is a form of economic development. And what has become apparent is that parking is just not sufficient to support the number of folks that are coming to Ulster County and looking to use our trails. So if there's a way of using any of this for some additional parking or expansion of parking where it's available, I think that's something else that I'd like to see this committee consider. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any numbers associated with that.
I think the number one is they're always crowded. On a nice day, they're just always full. Yeah. Legislator Archer?
On that point, I don't know, Dennis, have you guys been monitoring usage, and do you have any perspective on that issue with regards to trailheads? Because I know we've all had, I've talked to a lot of folks who have had challenges with some of the trailheads and getting there. If you're not there early enough, or if you just hit it right, it's been a little problematic.
We've been monitoring the ART through our Trail Stewards Program, the Shokan Rail Trail, but the other rail trails we don't monitor. There are counters out. We are counting. We're well over 280,000 visitors to the Shokan Rail Trail, but the other counters we haven't counted other rail trails. The Transportation Council is looking at a count program for trails. And we are looking at a safety. One of the things we're really concerned about, quite frankly, is the safety of some of the road crossings on some of the smaller trails. So we had proposed and have been delayed relative to doing some safety assessments on the public road crossings of some of the trails to make sure that they were handled correctly and signed correctly.
A real quick question, Dennis. Maybe you know this answer. Are some of those smaller parking facilities by design to not, you know, encourage overuse of the trails?
I would hate to say that they're by design. I think the limits are essentially where they're squeezed in many instances at the end of trails.
Yeah.
So where the trails hit the public road. So there's only so much availability. They have wetlands and other environmental restrictions there. And I would say that on the smaller trail systems, you're not really, I mean, I hike every weekend, so I don't find a situation where I run into a parking issue. But on the larger ones, particularly the River to Ridge Trail in New Paltz, there is a parking issue down there. The Ashokan Rail Trail has a parking issue. The difficulty of expanding that has to do with the fact that it's on DEP lands, and we've requested an expansion when we were building the trails. We requested an expansion of the parking facilities, and that was not received favorably by DEP, in particular because the one end of the trail, which is the Ashokan end of the trail on the west side, that's a temporary trailhead as they have to do work on the dikes. But the other trails, even the state trail systems, the Oneora Lake Trail, the Blue Ridge Forest Trail, and the hiking trails up into the Catskills, Those are almost impossible to get into unless you get there early. It's like Minnewaska State Park, unless you get there early. We've had conversations about trying to run transit into those facilities, but transit doesn't work well. And none of those trails facilities are capable of supporting bus parking or even bus access. So there are real constraints with respect to that, with respect to trying to get those trails acceptable. The best way, quite frankly, to deal with it is to actually provide the connections to the trail back to the activity center. So that's what the Midtown Linear Park does. combined with the Kingston Rail Trail, it actually connects the O&W so that you can actually park in the city of Kingston and get out to the trail system itself from the city. So you don't have to drive to a destination to walk.
Got you. Okay. Thank you. Anything else on that subject? Any other recommendations or suggestions, Abe?
Yeah, and this is probably something that Director Wiedemann has encountered as well, working with businesses in the community. But one of the barriers that we're definitely seeing to some of the hospitality and particularly restaurant businesses in kind of rebooting, as especially as some of the restrictions are being lifted, is they cannot hire. They cannot get folks to come back. And there are obviously a number of kind of macroeconomic and microeconomic factors for folks, you know, and their own calculus and perhaps the, you know, quality of life epiphanies some might have had during their months of UBI that they were, you know, receiving or whatever. And so we got to do something. This is, you know, I'm going to have businesses in my district closing because of hiring. They're going to have customers they want to serve. They've got restrictions lifted. They're ready to serve the customers, and they don't have employees to make it all happen. This is a huge issue. I don't know if it's a temporary issue where we can provide some sort of grant, if it's an issue of the quality of, you know, lifestyle of working in these types of businesses where we can provide mentorship training and wraparound services to the actual business owners to be able to provide for their employees. You know, I think we need to get very creative about this because we're not going to solve the issues such as what we saw in the presentation about wage growth. You know, we're not going to solve those. They're not going to be able to immediately raise prices, which is obviously part of the larger inflation conversation, but it's a critical, critical issue. And I think there might be many creative ways to approach it.
Tim, do you want to comment on that?
I'd just say you're exactly right, Legislator Uchitel. We are hearing louder and louder cries for help from not just hospitality and restaurant businesses, but really every business. You know, like anybody who needs to hire right now is pretty desperate to find candidates. We heard one, I think this was actually a restaurant business that listed a job opening and sort of facetiously posted the hourly wage at $40 an hour and got one response. So, you know, that's like, yeah, that's the situation that's out there right now. And I think I don't think there's one simple answer or reason, but I think that a big part of it is the microeconomic calculus of, you know, I can collect unemployment insurance. I have a year from my first application, and then I can even reapply again. I can get the $300 per week additional enhanced benefit. And if my previous job paid $12 an hour, there's no incentive to go back to that until that stops. And there's obviously more to it than that. And I think that this is something that we're struggling to figure out the right ways to respond to employees, knowing that those conditions are not something that we directly control, but also wanting to make sure that we set up for the potential wave. We've heard some folks mention it, describe it as musical chairs in September, where these benefits are gonna come to their end, and there hopefully will be a scramble back into the workforce and ultimately trying to prepare employers to be ready to welcome folks back in at that point. But in the meantime, I think there's a significant challenge that we don't have an easy answer to.
If I can just add to Tim's response, the other thing that, you know, I've been in the service business for 40 years, and believe it or not, people are still asking me if I want a 10 bar. And the flip side that we're hearing about this is childcare. The childcare and school, the school disruptions and childcare issues that compound that. And even if you want to go back to work, when you can actually be at work compared to when your kid's in school or when you can get childcare is also a real issue that we shouldn't dismiss.
Right. I agree. I think these are all issues that were just bubbling under the surface. They were in some form or another prior to COVID. And then once COVID hit, they just exploded and they became very real for a lot of people. And I agree. It's a very tricky problem to solve, I think, you know. You know, maybe you know, a grant, you know, that may be the answer. I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
something,
well, I think
something to incentivize them to, you know, stop going with their hand out and say, okay, I'm ready to go back to work, you know, for whatever reason, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. I think this is one of the target, one of the potential targets of that grant application that we just were talking about earlier. This is ultimately, we're talking probably about folks that fall into the low to moderate income household category, mm-hmm. and really understanding that there's going to be a period of time where there will be continued struggles, even if for no other reason than trying to get employees to be able to reopen fully. And so I think we're hoping that that's one part of the solution, but I think Dennis is entirely right. The macro or the microeconomic situation has to do equally with the ability to get income from other sources right now, and with the extremely high cost of childcare or whatever situation needs to be arrived at in order for folks to return to the workforce. And so mm-hmm. we'll hopefully see that start to shift at some point, but it's not an easy period of time now.
Okay, anyone else have anything? I have one small thing. It's not so small, but it's something I think is a worthwhile investment. And we have talked about this before with Dr. Wright and the housing plan in our preliminary discussions of it. And that is, you know, obviously there's been some rekindling of the idea of a county land bank, which I am for 100%. And some of the other things that we talked about in regard to that were to maybe make some sites ready for multi-unit housing, you know, do the infrastructure in preparation for that in places that typically don't want multifamily housings or there's have difficulty doing that. And if we have a property that, you know, we have foreclosed on it, taking it off the auction list and then upgrade it to make it a more attractive property for a developer to come in and provide some multifamily housing in an area where it's needed, I would like to see some of the money go towards something like that in some form or another to really, because again, this is like a short-term opportunity to fix a long-term problem, right? And so that's kind of like usually the other way around in government, you know. You know, but anyway, that's just an idea I had. Okay, anybody have anything else? All right, great. Thank you very much. And I will get with Tim Lin and we'll talk a little bit about how we can, you know, get a little bit more into the 2040 plan and see how we can disseminate that information, get into a little bit and peel it back and see some of the details you're looking for. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. And
if anyone known has anything else, I'll accept the motion to adjourn. Legislator Litz, second by Legislator DeLong, Legislator Uchitel, and Legislator Corcoran. I'm just kidding.
I might as well.
You know, all right, everybody. Thank you very much.
Be safe.
Thank you.
Stay healthy. Take care.
See you all.